It has been so long. We accepted the NFL draft as a happy distraction in the monotony that is the NFL offseason. We pretended like training camp and the preseason were meaningful, but now we're finally in a game week, finally doing a pregame show here on the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast, on Arrowhead Addict, on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. I could not be happier to be saying this, but we've got a game coming up. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to be taking on these San Diego Chargers at home, and I'm going to dive into that in just a second. But one day in the NFL season, and I'm already concerned about the Chiefs' chances at the AFC West, and we'll go into what the Broncos did on Thursday night, what the Raiders will do on Sunday, and I'll give my final predictions on what the Chiefs' season as a whole is going to end up looking like. We've got a Chiefs game. We have the Chiefs taking on the Chargers in Arrowhead coming up on Sunday. And I am ready to tell you what the Chiefs can do to win this game, what the Chiefs could do to let this game slip through their fingers, and how important it is that the Chiefs start off this season on a winning note at home. Sunday at noon, Arrowhead time on CBS, the San Diego Chargers will be coming to Kansas City to take on the Kansas City Chiefs for the first game of the Chiefs' NFL season, although the second game of the AFC West season because of what the Broncos did on Thursday night, which I will still try to hold back until later in the show. Let's go ahead and get the bits of news off the top here before we dive into the analysis. Number 3 overall pick Joey Bosa is not going to play for San Diego. He missed all of training camp, all of the preseason, and he's apparently had some issues with some tightness going out throughout these last few days that he's actually been with the team. So it's not a huge surprise that he won't play after what we know, but if you would have said at the end of April that Joey Bosa would not be playing week 1, that would have been a true shocker. So the Chiefs get a little bit of a break there with a future long-term impactor for the Chargers not playing in this game. Also for the Chargers defensive end, Damian Square is out with a 4-game suspension. One of the starting defensive ends, that's going to be a nice break for the Chiefs. On the Chiefs side of the ball, obviously no Justin Houston. He's out on the PUP list for at least 6 weeks. And I would be absolutely shocked if Jamaal Charles plays in this game after all of the hints that Andy Reid has given us. But kind of in the gray area, Charkandrick West and Phillip Gaines have practiced fully, but I'm concerned about both of them. Phillip Gaines has had issues trusting his knee, but I do expect him to start opposite Marcus Peters in this game because he is the most experienced and the most talented of these corners outside of Marcus Peters right now, or at least the best option. Kavari Russell may be the most talented of these guys, but he's not ready to play. As we talked about last week, Kavari Russell having issues picking up the playbook. So that's a whole other storyline that isn't going to impact this game. I don't expect to see Russell on the field probably at all, which is actually kind of concerning and kind of deflating. But I expect Phillip Gaines to be the guy that gets the start here, even though he does have perhaps a little too little faith in his injured knee, a reconstructed knee. But he's the guy here. On the other side of the ball for the Chiefs, I'm a little bit worried about Charkandrick West. He's listed as fully practicing for the Chiefs, but we haven't seen him in several weeks without much conversation about his health. Niall Davis is still on this roster. D'Anthony Thomas is still on this roster. I don't expect to see Thomas get, like, running back carries, but I think the Chiefs would be willing to give him some carries out of the slot, trying to run little sweeps or something. Also, Tyreek Hill could be in that conversation. But most importantly, Spencer Ware is going to get the start in this game, if I'm going to guess right now as of Friday. And I think Niall Davis could end up getting a lot more work than we ever would have expected, because I am concerned about where Charkandrick West lands on this week 1 roster, just because we haven't seen him in so long. Over on defense, back to the banged-up linebacker position for the Chiefs. Obviously, no Josh Malgo for the entire season. But outside with Tom Bahali, he's back practicing today. But I expect to see a fairly limited Tom Bahali. I think ideally what the Chiefs have been hoping for years now is that Dee Ford would begin to rotate in for Tom Bahali, give Holly more snaps off, and ultimately take over for Dee Ford. But Dee Ford is starting in Justin Houston's spot in this game. I'd be shocked to see anything else. So maybe Frank Zombo and Daddy Nicholas are getting... Daddy Nicholas, I still have a hard time calling him Daddy. Maybe Frank Zombo and Daddy Nicholas are getting more and more snaps in Tom Bahali's spot to give him a few plays off. Don't be surprised if you end up seeing Dee Ford and Daddy Nicholas rushing the passer at the same time. And if that concerns you, good, you're paying attention. That's just another thing to keep an eye on here with this Chiefs defense. Back on the Chargers side of the ball, two guys that are out for the season, but I don't think we've talked about yet on this show. Brandon Oliver, the running back, tore his Achilles tendon in a really, really painful video to watch. You can actually see that Achilles snap under his sock. It is brutal. He's out for the season, and so is wide receiver Stevie Johnson. Both of them on the injured reserve. there's your injury news. Now let's go ahead and talk about the matchups that matter most. We haven't had the pleasure of watching either the Chiefs or the Chargers actually play a meaningful NFL game yet this season, so if you've been listening to the show for a long time and any of these concerns sound like I'm beating a dead horse, it's because that dead horse is all we've got, and it continues to be an issue here, something I'm concerned about in this game, and frankly, I expect it to be an issue this entire season. I already miss Sean Smith. I know he didn't look very good with Oakland in that one preseason game. I get it. But I have severe concerns about the secondary all the way across the board. Not just because I don't believe in Eric Berry's ability to actually contribute in pass defense like we mythologize him to be able to do. I don't see that from him on a day-to-day basis as a player. Although I do think he is a valuable player and it's worth having him on the team. I wouldn't have franchise tagged him. I would have franchise tagged Sean Smith because of what we're talking about now. Philip Gaines is going to be starting opposite Marcus Peters, and then at the slot is probably going to be Steven Nelson. I have severe concerns about truly all three of those names, and let me defend myself before you talk about how great Marcus Peters is, because I agree, Marcus Peters is the best corner on this team. He is currently, I would say, the second most valuable, well, maybe the most valuable, but perhaps the second best at his position in this secondary, behind Ron Parker, who is sneaky underrated. All of last year, he was incredibly underrated. Ron Parker's very, very good. Marcus Peters, he's a defensive rookie of the year last year, which is nothing to sneeze at, but he's going to be tested differently this year. So let's talk about Marcus Peters first. Without Sean Smith opposite him, he's probably going to get more respect on a play-to-play basis. He got targeted more than any corner in the NFL last season, and he gave up a lot of yards, but he also made a lot of big plays. I don't expect Marcus Peters to have as many interceptions or many big plays this year because he's not going to get thrown at as often. That's respect for a young corner. You don't get targeted, you don't get that many picks, your numbers look worse, but you're more respected. You could take any of the best corners of the last handful of years. Go back to Nnamdi Asamoah or Darrell Revis, two guys that really stand out to me. Those guys aren't incredibly well known because of their Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu type interceptions. They're known because that's where your number one receiver goes to die. When you're playing the Jets with Darrell Revis, you would say, especially like in fantasy football, you go, "Oh, I've got Reggie Wayne, and he's going up against Darrell Revis. I'm going to see what other options I have because Reggie Wayne is going to be shut down in this game." And that's just kind of how it worked with Darrell Revis. With Marcus Peters, he's going to get some of that respect this year. I think he is going to lock down some very good receivers this year, and he's not going to get challenged as much. However, he's not nearly as established as Asamoah or Revis, as I've kind of unfairly compared him to. More importantly here now, though, last season, teams were avoiding Sean Smith and targeting Marcus Peters. They went, "Oh, there's a rookie, let's make him prove himself." He continued to prove himself more and more, but they would still go to him because it was better than going at Sean Smith, a true number one corner in the NFL. Now the Chiefs have a growing number one corner in the NFL in Marcus Peters, a guy who's going to continue to get better, I certainly believe. But opposite of him is Philip Gaines, who has started three games in his career at outside corner, if my memory serves me correctly, last year during Sean Smith's suspension. A guy with three NFL starts outside. They've got a slot guy with Steven Nelson, who it took half a season to get on the field last year and has not looked very good in the preseason, especially when he was playing outside. Steven Nelson cannot play outside corner. He's a slot guy at best and only. Extremely young guy there to be able to target. Guys like Kavari Russell and DJ White, guys who were draft picks who didn't get a ton of playing time in the preseason. DJ White got more than Russell did because he had an easier time with the playbook, but he didn't look fantastic. I'm not holding my breath for Kevin Acker, a guy that the Niners gave up for a 7th-round pick. None of that is absolutely thrilling me with this Chiefs secondary, and I think Phillip Rivers knows that. More concerningly, I think Phillip Rivers has the weapons to be able to exploit that. Let's start with Keenan Allen, who I think we might be underrating kind of collectively as Chiefs fans and analysts and fanalists or whatever, because we forgot how good he has been and how the sparks that he's shown. Because last year, he only played 8 games and missed the second half of the season with a kidney injury. He's back now, and last year in 8 games, he had 89 targets, 67 receptions, 725 yards, 4 touchdowns. You can double those numbers if you want. I would even choose to go beyond doubling those numbers, because I think as he hits a stride with Phillip Rivers, he continues to grow. He's a very, very talented young receiver. He's 23 years old. He is headed upwards. He's now getting paid about what Jeremy Maclin's getting paid. which might sound crazy, but I think is absolutely reasonable, especially considering how young he is. Keenan Allen is going to be the guy who consistently throughout this game, win or loss, is going to make you yell at your TV and pull out your hair a little bit. Opposite him, though, is Travis Benjamin. And in his first year with the Chargers, he had a really nice season last year with Cleveland. He started 15 games, appeared in all 16, ended up with 68 catches, just a little under 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns. And that was with the Browns crop of quarterbacks, highlighted by Josh McCown and Johnny Manziel and Austin Davis. You could think very precious little of Philip Rivers, and I would tell you that Travis Benjamin is on the moon to have that Philip Rivers as his quarterback right now, as opposed to the tripe he was playing with last year. And even then, I think you would be doing yourself a disservice to write off Philip Rivers. Last year was a really rough year for Rivers, but I think it's because more than anything else, he was surrounded by poor options. Keenan Allen being back and healthy is enormous. Travis Benjamin as number two receiver is totally respectable. Melvin Gordon is better. The running back was rookie last year, second year running back. He's better than what we saw last season. He was very unlucky with touchdowns, and he was a little bit slow on the uptake for the NFL speed. I think he is better than what we saw last year. Rivers has healthier weapons, has better weapons. This offense, this Chargers offense, is going to take a step forward from last year. I think every team in the NFL, every team in the AFC West right now, on some level is being underrated by Chiefs fans or by Chiefs analysts or by local analysts. Obviously, that's a very, very broad brush, but I can think of a few examples in particular. People saying that there's an 80-85% chance the Chiefs win this division. I think that's absolutely insane. I would say it's fine for the Chiefs to be the favorite in the division, but these are real football teams. There are four actually good football teams, or at least, at the very least, teams that can win games in this division. I think the Chargers finished last in this division. I think they probably would finish last by a couple of games. But there will be games where the Chargers beat teams that you did not expect them to beat. Frankly, it could be the Chiefs, if not at home this week, whenever the Chiefs go to San Diego. You need to be aware of this Chargers team and absolutely do not write them off as if they're some pushover, because they're not going to be. Especially while the Chiefs were without Justin Houston. To spoil a point I'm going to make later with the Broncos, if you watch the Broncos-Panthers game, and you saw what Von Miller did in the fourth quarter, he ruined Cam Newton. He ruined that pocket. If Von Miller's not on the field there, the Panthers win that game. I feel that's like truly as close to a fact as an opinion can get. If you would have replaced Von Miller with Dee Ford, the Broncos lose that game on Thursday night. That's essentially what the Chiefs are doing right now with an injured Justin Houston. They are replacing Justin Houston with Dee Ford. If the Broncos would have replaced Von Miller with Dee Ford, they would have lost to Carolina at home. That matters. If you want to play out this Chiefs-Chargers game with Justin Houston, and the Chargers are they hang around a long time, and then they're trying to make one late run to grab a touchdown at the end to win it late, and Justin Houston ends up getting a sack on Rivers as time expires, then you go, this game was always, this was in the bag. The Chiefs are just more talented, better coach, better players, all of that. Well, if Dee Ford on that play gets run behind Philip Rivers, and all of a sudden he steps into a pass that hits Keenan Allen in the back of the end zone, everything changes. So a few weeks ago on the show, I talked about how important are Justin Houston and Josh Malga, how do you judge the importance of a guy who doesn't score points. I think you saw it with the Broncos last night. I think you saw, or Thursday night, depending on when you're listening to the show. For me, it was last night. I think you saw how to judge how important a pass rusher is, because he completely derailed the Panthers defense or Panthers offense. He got in Cam Newton's head, almost literally. Most of the Broncos almost literally got inside of Cam Newton's cranium by hitting him in the head with their heads, which was flagged, I think, 1 out of 4 times. I'll get to that later. But to put Dee Ford in this game, and to have Dee Ford and Daddy Nicholas, or Dee Ford and Frank Zombo on the field, or Daddy Nicholas and Frank Zombo on the field at the same time a couple of times, which will probably happen in this game, it's going to make it a whole lot harder for the Chiefs to get to Philip Rivers. So I'll give my actual final thought on that here in just a moment. On the other side of the ball, If you didn't catch it, I'm afraid of the Chargers offense against the Chiefs defense. If I sound like a fool eventually, then please tweet me, at JB Briscoe, tell me that I'm a fool. Ideally, tell me that before the game, though. I want to know if you disagree with what I'm saying. Tell me before they hit the field so I can accept your opinion without having seen the game first. On the other side of the ball, I have one concern, really, about the Chargers defense. The guy who could actually make life miserable for Alex Smith is linebacker Melvin Ingram. He's the guy I'm concerned about on the Chargers defense. And he's going to move around in all likelihood, so the matchup on defense, or the matchup on offense for the Chiefs, I suppose, is Melvin Ingram versus Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz. And I think, frankly, both of those guys can absolutely hold up here. This might be unideal. I'm not going to say this is heretical, because I think most people would agree with me. But I actually have a little bit more confidence in Mitch Schwartz on the right side than I do in Eric Fisher on the left side. And I was on board with the Eric Fisher extension, because having both of those guys is hugely important. If we're talking about Ja Reed and Mitchell Schwartz, the whole offensive line gets yanked down a notch. If we're talking about Donald Stevenson and Mitchell Schwartz, the whole offensive line gets shakier. Having both of those guys on either edge, locking up what this offensive line can be on the edges, is hugely important. I'm totally cool with it. But I actually would have slightly more confidence in Mitch Schwartz than I do in Eric Fisher in this game. And they will have their hands full, because although Melvin Ingram is the guy that I'm most concerned about, Brandon Mabane in the middle of the defensive line is going to cause a little bit of trouble. Corey Legit, another defensive tackle, is going to be trying to get as much pressure up on those guards as possible. So especially with those two guys, Mitch Morse and those two guards, which I do expect to be Parker Anger and LDT, those guys are going to have their hands full, but I'm not terribly concerned about them. I am concerned about Melvin Ingram getting on Eric Fisher a few times. And that happens a couple of times when you're not in really unideal situations. And the Chiefs are paying a big price. It's either an Alex Smith strip sack, or it's a sack on 3rd and 12, or a sack in the red zone that turns a touchdown into a field goal. And I expect to see a couple of drives that should be touchdowns and then field goals for the Chiefs. I've grown to expect that now. As far as the secondary for the Chargers, I think the Chiefs have a lot of advantages here. Chris Conley and Jeremy Maclin have physical profiles that these guys are not going to be able to hold up against. Go back to, I'm just looking at the Chargers depth chart right now. Like, in case you forgot, Brandon Flowers is one of the starting cornerbacks. Brandon Flowers is not going to be able to keep pace with or get up to the heights of Jeremy Maclin and Chris Conley on the outsides. In the slot, I guess it's Albert Wilson, because Rod Streeter is gone. Tyreek Hill didn't look very good. De'Anthony Thomas might be getting some playing time in this game out of the slot. Whoever ends up playing in the slot for the Chargers at any given point is going to have a really hard time keeping up with the speed of a guy like De'Anthony Thomas or Tyreek Hill. And if Albert Wilson is used appropriately, he can get a few passes over the middle that I feel fine about. Perhaps most excitingly, though, and this is going to be a theme throughout the season, this isn't necessarily specifically for the Chargers, where the Chargers especially are going to be exploited by the strength of the Chiefs, but literally the entire NFL, there is nobody who's going to be able to cover what the Chiefs are going to be able to do with their group of tight ends. Travis Kelce is a top five tight end in football, I would argue. Demetrius Harris is a physical force that not only can actually pass block and run block, but can get up for the ball. Ross Travis, I think it was actually Travis that Andy Reid called the best blocker on the team, an ex-basketball player. Ross Travis, the ex-basketball player, can get up, is a giant frame. And even James O'Shaughnessy was drafted last year to come in and be a pass-catching option. Those guys are big and fast and strong and can locate a football and come down with it. I don't know what else you could possibly want from your tight ends. Maybe you say that the Chiefs have gone a little bit too pass catcher heavy with their group of tight ends, and the blocking isn't as strong as, go back to the days of Tony Gonzalez and Jason Dunn, where there was a clear receiving tight end and a clear pass blocking tight, or a clear blocking tight end. And occasionally, I mean, Tony G could block and Dunn could catch a few passes. But in this case, I think we're looking at four guys on this Chiefs tight end roster that their strength is catching passes and running good routes and getting separation and then coming down with the ball. Those are matchup nightmares for any defense, because linebackers aren't generally fast enough to keep up with those guys. Corners aren't big and strong enough to keep up with those guys. If the Chiefs are going to get those, we talked last week or 2 weeks ago about these small chunk plays, where we're not talking about 25 and 30 yard plays, but we're talking about 8 to 12 yard plays. We're on 1st and 10. You just get another first down right away. The Chiefs can do that with these tight ends a lot. Jeremy Maclin can convert those chunk plays. Chris Conley can convert those chunk plays. These tight ends can all do that. Travis Kelce getting hit with the ball after 6 yards, slanting across the middle, is going to go for 4 more yards every time because he's a hard man to tackle. That's just how this is going to work. So if the Chiefs and Alex Smith and Andy Reid are willing to make those play calls and then execute those plays, I think we're going to see some nice small chunk plays from these tight ends. Lastly, this run game, we've talked about over and over all offseason. I am totally enamored with what the Chiefs' run game can do. In this game, I'm not as optimistic as I was during the preseason because Jamaal Charles is in all likelihood out. There's no Darren Reeves, which is fine, but that's just a point to make. Because Niall Davis could end up getting on the field here. I don't know about Charkandrick West. And I don't really want Spencer Ware to get 80% of the carries in a game. And he won't. And especially if West is okay. Then those guys will split some of the carries. And I would ultimately feel just fine about it. I feel great about Spencer Ware in the red zone. But I don't know if I always want Spencer Ware to be getting the carries between the 40s. That's when I hope Jamaal Charles, whenever he returns, he will... I mean, maybe with Charles, it might be between the 20s even, or up until the 20. Because he is so good, man. We've been so spoiled with running backs in Kansas City, all the way back to Priest Holmes. I mean, from Priest Holmes to Larry Johnson to Jamaal Charles to now we're talking about how good Charkandrick West and Spencer Ware have been. We are incredibly spoiled with how good our running backs have been. And with Charles being out last year, I don't want to undersell his importance to this team. Or if not his importance, maybe that's the luxury, is he's not vital to this team currently. But if he does come back, it's going to get a whole lot more dangerous. But in this game, though, without Jamaal Charles, Spencer Ware is going to get a lot of work. And we'll just have to see if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Ultimately, I'm a little bit hesitant on if that is, in fact, a positive or negative for Spencer Ware. Now, where does this game end up? Here is my official prediction for this game, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. And if you want to hear more about MyBookie, hold on just a few minutes and I'll give you more information. Yes, but there's an actual sponsor on this show now. Thank you to MyBookie.ag for jumping on board and supporting this show. The prediction? I'm going to say Kansas City Chiefs 30, San Diego Chargers 24. My tone isn't going to change here. Keenan Allen and Travis Benjamin are going to give significant challenges to this young set of Chiefs cornerbacks. And the depleted outside pass rush here is not going to do the secondary any favors. Whenever you're playing with 100% Justin Houston and 100% Tom Bahaly at those outside linebacker positions, they can make a depleted secondary look better than it actually is. If you've got those guys on the edges just getting inside the mind of the quarterback and, more importantly, getting inside the pocket of the quarterback and just making his day more miserable, then a young secondary gets more opportunities to make a play on a poorly thrown ball, on a bad decision. The defense overall looks incredibly better with an effective pass rush. That's why pass rushes are so important in this league. However, the Chiefs don't have that. I'm worried about how into the game Tom Bahaly is going to be. Even if he is constantly, he's going to be opposite Dee Ford the entire game. And Tom Bahaly, if Tom Bahaly is what he was last year, which was pretty good, I'll take that again this year. I would absolutely sign up for last year's Tom Bahaly for one more season. But opposite of Dee Ford, it's not as useful. Because it's such an incredible drop-off from Justin Houston down to Dee Ford. And if we have to see Dee Ford and Frank Zombo, or Dee Ford and Daddy Nicholas, or Frank Zombo and Daddy Nicholas on the field at the same time, the secondary has to become the place of strength here. Or maybe it doesn't. Because I don't have any faith in the outside linebacker pass rush right now. I don't have a lot of faith in the secondary being able to hold down Allen, Benjamin. Maybe Antonio Gates walks out of his out of a grave and becomes his zombie self in this game. I think with all of that being said, the pressure falls to a unit I haven't talked about yet today. I've been saving for this exact moment. The pressure falls to the defensive line. Dontari Poe, Allen Bailey, Jay Howard, Chris Jones. They absolutely must, and in my opinion will, disrupt Rivers just enough to give Alex Smith and this Chiefs offense the upper hand throughout the game, and the Chiefs win it in what feels like a shootout and is constantly frustratingly close. I think we're going to come out of this game going, man, That was closer than I thought. They should have really thumped a bad team here. And I think it's truly because of the depth. I mean, I didn't even... Rakeem Nunez-Roche still on the team. Nick Williams still on the team. These guys up front are not only incredibly talented on that front line, where Jay Howard, Allen Bailey, Dontari Poe could universally start for any team in football. All three of them could start for any team in football. The backups, half of them could start for half the league. They could all certainly make any roster in football. This is, I think, the most talented and the deepest 3-4 defensive line in all of the NFL. So not only can those guys at the front end, those front three, be getting pressure all day, as soon as Jay Howard looks a little bit gassed, Chris Jones can go in and make a play right in the face of Phillip Rivers. There's not a place on this team that I have more confidence in than defensive line, even with the run defense issues from the early on in the preseason. I think Derek Johnson and Justin March, starting at the inside linebacker positions, will do enough to keep Melvin Ingram and the rest of that Chargers run game, maybe even the pass stuff to Danny Woodhead. I think that will stay in check with DJ, with Justin March, with the addition of Sam Barrington and DJ Alexander as the depth guys. I'm not and also Eric Berry playing deep linebacker as he does. I'm not going to panic about the return. Boy, this is kind of strange. The return of Eric Berry. I mean, we talked about him so much and we know him so well that it actually kind of like slipped my mind that he wasn't around this whole preseason. The return of Eric Berry will help the Chiefs run defense. It will not fix it, as I've talked about in weeks past. He keeps 5-yard gains from being 12-yard gains. He does not make 5-yard gains at a 1 or 2-yard gain. That's what Derek Johnson and Justin March have to be able to do, and I think they'll do it just fine here against Melvin Ingram with whatever Danny Woodhead, whenever he gets the ball, with anything that the Chargers can run at the Chiefs on the ground. The pass game is where I see this almost falling apart, but that defensive line gets strong enough up into the face of Phillip Rivers, and I'm happy to say that I think the Chiefs win this game, but by just less than a touchdown. And I made this prediction before I looked at the lines from mybookie.ag, the new supporter of this show. I said the Chiefs by 6. The line that they have is the Chiefs minus 6.5. At this point, I'm not touching that line. Because I think this is a terrible, terrible prediction hedging, so I'm going to do it quickly and then try to backtrack, I suppose. I could absolutely see this going either direction. I could see if the Chiefs get a really, really, really successful start, the defensive line has a really impactful push early on, a couple of big picks from Phillip Rivers at the beginning of the game, and the Chiefs win this game by 18-20. I would love that. I would be very, very pleased to see the game go in that direction. But I think that's a pretty small likelihood of that happening. Maybe a 25% chance of that happening a quarter of the time. And then perhaps a quarter of the time, I see this game going to being 30-24, with 2.5 minutes left, the Chargers get the ball, and they slowly but surely march down the field and score, and the Chargers win this game late. I think that happens about 25% of the time. But 50% of the time, I think the Chiefs win it by less than 6.5. So if you are looking to take a stand on where the Chiefs end up in this game against that 6.5 point line, I would go ahead and give up those points. But for me personally, I'll be staying away from that 6.5 point line, which is just perfect. If you ever put some money on a football game, scored a big win, only to have to wait weeks to collect your cash, that sounds incredibly frustrating. I only ever get my predictions wrong, so I wouldn't know. But if that's been you, there are now thousands of online players who've had that same problem who are eliminating that wait time by switching to MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag and stop wasting your time on other websites. Play live, partake in the in-game betting, and watch the odds change in real time. Remember, it all moves fast. When you win, enjoy no-hassle payout so there's nothing holding you back from your victory cash. Join now and get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar up to $1,000. Plus, if you sign up and make your first deposit within the first 30 minutes of signing up, you get another 10% bonus. What does it take to get that? Just use the promo code KICKER for your first 100% bonus up to $1,000 and do it in your first 30 minutes for another 10%. Remember, that is the promo code KICKER. Visit mybookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS. That's 844-900-2387 to open your account and start winning today. Use the promo code KICKER to get your 100% deposit bonus and show the good folks at MyBookie that they're spending their money wisely when they support this Roughing the Kicker podcast. Expert or rookie, you've got to check out mybookie.ag. Sign up today with the promo code KICKER. After you go and win some money over at MyBookie, maybe you want to help support the show with that same money. back into Roughing the Kicker, as so many people have done through the magic of Patreon.com. Over at patreon.com/RTK, you can sign up to give a little bit of money to help support this show, to keep it rolling fast and furious through the regular season as I am ready to get going and to keep talking about these Kansas City Chiefs. Here's some people who have done that through Patreon, the $20 group of supporters every single month: Don Beal at DonBeal32 on Twitter, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, Randy Singh, and Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy on Twitter are all supporting this show at $20 a month. Thank you so much to all of those guys. The $10 group, longtime supporters Ty DeClaire at TyDeClaire44 and Christy Roadlander at C Roadlander on Twitter, and the $5 group headed up by Josh Beadle. The $5 group gets you a shout-out. The $10 group and up gets you a shout-out with your Twitter handle on the show if you're trying to boost up those Twitter followers among the Kansas City Chiefs community. And the $20 group gets all of that, plus any question you have, I will answer in the show. I try to answer questions from Twitter all the time anyway. But in that case, it can be about the Chiefs, somewhere else in the NFL, about the meaning of life, about if Alex Smith was a Ninja Turtle, which one would he be? I think he's Donatello. Patreon.com/RTK. Before we dive into the rest of the AFC West and recap what the Broncos did and look ahead to what the Raiders will do this week, I want to do something that I've failed to do for a few weeks in a row now. I want to go to the Arrowhead Addict comments on the last episode of this podcast. If you want to get a hold of me, you want to ask a question for the show, make a comment about the show, add on to a point I've made, disagree with anything, there are several ways that you can do that, and during this season I'm going to do better at actually making sure I record all of these things. You can tweet me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. That's where I do most of my interactions. If I can respond quickly, I will. Otherwise, I'll add it onto a list to talk about on the next episode of the show. If you have a long-form question, you can take it over to facebook.com/RTK show. I'll get to you there in the messages or as a comment. Plus, over on arrowheadaddict.com, where these shows are all posted up, there's a comment section where you can debate with me, with other fans on Arrowhead Addict. It's a great community. You ought to be involved in that to go on and grow these conversations. You can even go to blogtalkradio.com/RTK, get the shows from there. The show is now on Stitcher. If you Google search for Roughing the Kicker on Stitcher's app or on their website, wherever you get your podcasts, it's impossible to miss them. So you can get the shows in any of those places. Make sure you do subscribe, because these shows are going to start coming out just about twice a week. Maybe a little bit less, like whenever we hit the bye week and whatnot. But I think it's safe to say you should be expecting two shows a week out of me, which is a commitment that I am willing to make, partially thanks to my bookie and being able to help support the show financially. So I know there's been a lot of ads and talking about how you can follow the show and support the show over these last few minutes. If you're listening right now, I want to say thank you for sitting through those, because my book, especially if you sign up and use that code KICKER for my bookie, and those Patreon people are supporting the show financially, which is supporting me, which is giving me the time to be able to make these shows in the midst of everything else going on in my life, and being able to do this more often and do it with better equipment and to do it where it's very easy to justify my time. So I can't say thank you enough to all the people supporting the show financially and you listening now simply for listening through all of it. I'm hugely appreciative. Now let's go ahead and jump into the comments. That's enough talking about myself. From Jim Harbaugh's guys on Arrowhead Addict comment section, said Kansas City won half their total wins without Justin Houston last year, so they don't need him in the regular season. They need him for the playoffs. I happen to disagree about this. I do think that, and they're not going to have him for at least over a third of the season. We know that for sure, depending on how long, and then the playoffs are a different story, hopefully. Justin Houston is hugely important to this team and this defense. This defense is worse than it was last year. I don't think Frank Zombo and Dee Ford can come in and be substitute teachers and be good enough to keep this from getting ugly. If you gave me the exact defense the Chiefs had last year and you went ahead and still added Chris Jones and then you just didn't have Justin Houston for a little while, maybe even a younger Tom Bahali to go ahead and give like a total repeat of what last year was, I would feel pretty good about it. But I'm not completely in agreement with this. I think that's underrating the importance, the explosiveness, and the disruptiveness of Justin Houston. Also in the comments last week from Fax, he said some very nice things about the show, which I'm hugely appreciative of. He said, "Is you're no doubt aware, though, the jet sweep has and will continue to play an effective role in setting up the enemy defense for subsequent plays. I would also mention that Alex Smith can and does use that motion to evaluate the defense and convert the call to something potentially more rewarding. In short, it has uses beyond the yardage one can reasonably expect on that particular snap, much like old traditional screens." That's a really good call. I am totally on board with that. That's a fantastic point by Fax. The jet sweeps drive me insane because they're so often either a loss of yardage or such a small reward, especially when run with Albert Wilson. that it absolutely drives me mad to see a play wasted on those, but it does set up future plays, especially for Alex Smith. Even now, though, I feel better about the jet sweeps because you do have to consider what it's worth on that individual play. But with Tyreek Hill able to run those now, and hopefully D'Anthony Thomas back to run those now, those individual plays also have a small chance of being rewarding. So I have a little less vitriol for those now, as long as Albert Wilson keeps his hands off the ball. Also from Facts, he said, I have extremely high expectations from the new variations we'll see from the three tight end personnel grouping this season. It's my understanding that this formation will also be a package play cornerstone from which Alex Smith will be able to change into and out of a variety of runs and pass route combinations. Assuming that often the offense can establish a run threat, this formation and Alex's use of it could be practically indefensible. Thank you for laying that out better than I did a few minutes ago, talking about this Chiefs tight end group. The versatility there, the matchup problems there, are incredible. The fact that becomes a little bit of a base personnel group, where it's very easy for Alex Smith to move into it or to move out of it, and then to do several things out of it as a personnel group, is even more useful for what this team can possibly do with all of those tight ends. So, beautifully said, Facts. Thank you not only for the compliments, which I do appreciate, but more importantly, for the baller analysis. Nice job. Also on Twitter, a question from Keyshawn Brown. Do you think Daddy and Moses can spare Tamba and make an impact in this game? I talked about that a little bit earlier, so hopefully I answered most of that question back then. I think they'll be able to do, and also from Sean Dixon, said that his concern is the Chiefs getting to Rivers. I think the Chiefs will be able to get most of their pressure thanks to the defensive line. There will be a couple of plays when somebody makes something happen other than Tamba Hali from the outside linebacker position. But I don't know if it'll be D. Ford or Daddy Nicholas or Desmond Moses or Frank Zombo. I have limited faith and limited optimism with what exactly these Chiefs linebackers are going to be able to do. Speaking of limited optimism, good Lord, last night, Thursday night, the Denver Broncos started off, they beat the Carolina Panthers. The game started off where the Broncos' defense looked worse than I expected and the offense looked better than I expected, even though they had some bad turnovers early. Both began to settle back into the expectations a little bit in the second half. It was an ugly thing to watch as a Chiefs fan, really hoping to see Trevor Siemian severely struggle. Trey Wingo tweeted early on, the biggest upset so far was the Panthers' offensive line shutting out Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, and all of them. No sacks in the first half in Denver. But then in the fourth quarter, Von Miller just wreaked absolute havoc. And also Danny Parkins pointed out on Twitter Chris Collinsworth's analysis of how Cam Newton didn't drop back as deep as he did in the Super Bowl, which made it harder for Von Miller to get to him by turning that angle even more quickly. That's something we talked about, those flexibility of the hips with D. Ford and Daddy Nicholas and Von Miller and the difference between all of those guys. But man, by the end of it, Von Miller was camping back in the backfield. The Broncos defense looked absolutely beatable for the first three quarters. Fourth quarter totally changed. And the way that the Panthers were beating the Broncos with their offense is in a way where I think that it should give the Chiefs a little bit of optimism. Cam Newton's an MVP, but the Chiefs' offense can emulate what the Panthers did. Long, grueling drives, the scrambling quarterback keeps it moving, stays up in the pocket. The Chiefs can emulate that. However, by the end of the game, the Broncos took back over on defense, and even with an extreme, I think there are four times whenever a Bronco defender went helmet to helmet with Cam Newton, I think two or three times really noticeably just like launching helmet to helmet into Cam Newton. It was called one time. That's something we're going to have to keep a really close eye on whenever the Chiefs and Broncos play later in the year. But the Broncos looked awfully good. Trevor Siemian played a very, very passable, reasonable game, which is all I think the Broncos could have possibly asked for. The defense hit their stride late in the game against a very good offense. And again, Siemian did very well against a very good defense. And yes, there were major mistakes from Siemian and the rest of the Broncos offense. But overall, as an entire package, I'm saying that the Broncos are very happy with what Trevor Siemian did in this game, especially against one of the best defenses in football. And the Broncos defense going up against one of the very strongest offenses in football. It was a really good showing for Denver. And I don't think we were underrating the Broncos. I don't think I was underrating the Broncos. I've expected them to still have a top five defense. And I understood they won the Super Bowl last year with no quarterback because Brock Osweiler really struggled. Peyton Manning came back and couldn't make the throws but had the head to win the games and ultimately to get through the Super Bowl on the back of the defense. I think NBC gave like the Player of the Game Award to Trevor Siemian, which was whatever. I rolled my eyes, because this game is about the Denver defense. That's what this team is about, is the defense. And that's not going to change. It was how it went last year. It's how it's going to be this year. Scoring against the Broncos defense is going to be very difficult. The Chiefs, whenever those games finally do come around, is going to be forcing those quarterbacks. The key is going to be forcing whoever quarterback is playing into making rookie mistakes, which Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch are both very capable of doing. But it was a really good showing for the Broncos here. And I think it's totally reasonable. Everyone who still has the Broncos ahead of the Chiefs in the power rankings, everyone who still has the Broncos winning the division again this year, I'm going to go through the Chiefs schedule one more time on this show before the season begins here, obviously, in about 5 minutes. And I'm going to give you where I think this how I think this division plays out. But it gave me pause. I'll say that very, very truthfully. The Oakland Raiders are going to be playing at the New Orleans Saints. Back to mybookie.ag. They have the Raiders as a 1.5-point underdog in this game. I think the Raiders, after looking at their schedule a little bit, especially looking at their matchups with the Chiefs, I think the Raiders are a good young team, an improving young team, who will ultimately miss the playoffs this year and will have a hard time in New Orleans. I'm going to take the Saints in this game. For the record, I took the Panthers in Denver like a dummy. I mean, it was a very, very close game. I don't have any problems with having made that pick, but I am upset about it now because I hate watching the Broncos win. So I have the Panthers. I'm going to go ahead and take the Saints in this game as well. I think the Raiders will struggle to get into a groove early on in the Superdome. It's going to be just enough. Drew Brees has a new contract. The Saints aren't great, but I think they'll do just enough at home. If this game was in Oakland, I would be taking the Raiders just as a baseline for how I think this game plays out. The Raiders being a 1.5-point underdog in this game is basically saying, for my bookie, that if they were my bookie, the URL, not my personal bookie, although you could say it's the same thing. It's basically saying that the Raiders would be a 1.5-point favorite at home or a 4.5-point favorite in Oakland. So I do think the home field advantage here is real. I think maybe the noise gets into Derek Carr's head just a little bit. I think the Saints take this game, but in a very, very close one. So I went through all four schedules for the AFC West, and somewhat unscientifically, but as accurately as possible, especially for Denver and Kansas City, the two teams I think will be at the top of this division, spoiler alert, went together and came up with the records I will give to each of these teams. And to some extent, I found myself a little bit surprised by the numbers that I came up with. And especially for the Chiefs, I think I have a logic to it. The San Diego Chargers, I went through and I found 6 wins for this team. I think the Chargers go 6-10 with a really tough division where they get beaten around in their own division a little bit. In fact, I think I actually have them losing both games to Denver and both games to Kansas City. So in an easier division, they would be getting out of this a whole lot easier. If they split, obviously, those two teams, we're talking about an 8-8 season for the Chargers, something I think they would absolutely take right now after being the third overall pick, having the third overall pick last year. The Chargers at 6-10. One click up, I have the Oakland Raiders at 7-9. This could be a surprise if you've been listening to the show through this offseason, because I really like the Chargers' core. I like the direction they've been moving in this offseason. I like their defense. I like their offensive line. I like Amari Cooper. I like Derek Carr. This is an offense going in the right direction, a team going in the right direction, an organization going in the right direction. But they have a pretty tough schedule here. And as I'm going to talk about with the Chiefs, they have a couple of really bad breaks when it comes to dealing with Kansas City. So I have the Raiders right now at 7-9. Up at 11-5, I have two teams sitting all the way up there. After the win against Carolina at home, I have an impossible time picking against the Broncos in Denver, and I think they match up well with most every team on their road schedule, I guess at least over half of their teams on the road schedule. So I have them going 11-5 this season, as I currently have with the Kansas City Chiefs. And frankly, at this point, I might have a little bit more confidence in the Broncos, although either of these teams going 12-4 or 10-6 would not surprise me one bit. One game moving either direction would not shock me. But there's my Cliff's Notes version for the rest of the AFC West. As I said, though, the Chiefs at 11-5, I want to tell you how I got there. Keeping in mind, they're going 6 games without Justin Houston at least, and probably a couple of games without Jamal Charles, who's now listed as doubtful for against the Chargers game. Let me tell you how I got there with the Chiefs. San Diego at home, I'll take the win. At Houston, I think they go into Houston again and win, but that's a harder game than you would think right now, I believe. The Jets at home, I think that's a victory with a pretty good Jets team. At Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football, take the loss. There's your first loss of the year, 3-1 going into the bye week. Out of the bye week, the Chiefs go to Oakland. Andy Reid is very good out of the bye. This is a huge break for the Chiefs. In Oakland is one of their tougher games this year that I think is also winnable. In Pittsburgh, in Carolina, in Denver, in Indianapolis, all of those games, I think the Chiefs would probably lose regardless of the bye week. maybe not Indy. But in this case, a game where I think the Raiders would be a slight favorite going into Oakland, having that bye week might be just enough to get the Chiefs rested up, to give Andy Reid more time to scheme up with that, with and Bob Sutton as well, the rest of the offensive coordinators. I think that's a big advantage and a great time for that bye week for the Chiefs in the first half of the season. So they think they do end up winning in Oakland as well. Then the Chiefs come back home, deal with a mediocre Saints team, will take the victory there, then go to Indianapolis. I think that's a tough place to play. I think Andrew Luck is really good. This game could absolutely go either direction, but right now I'm saying that the Colts end up taking that game. Then back home, the Chiefs get to beat up on Jacksonville and Arrowhead, an improved Jacksonville team, but not a team that can hold a candle to this Chiefs offense. The Chiefs are going to score 35 in that game. Then they go to Carolina. I almost wish the Chiefs would take another bye week during that week and just give everybody a rest. I legitimately think that would probably be the best thing for this Chiefs team, because I think Carolina is still very good, even though they did just lose in Denver. Tampa Bay at home is a nice winnable game in Arrowhead. Then a tough back-to-back here, where the Chiefs get bad luck on their schedule one time, in a very favorable schedule. The Chiefs go to Denver, take the L, and then go to Atlanta in the ATL. I think the Chiefs lose in Atlanta as well. That's going to be a game that I think is very popular to take the Chiefs in, especially with the struggles that the Falcons have on defense. But right now, going to Denver and getting hopefully not completely massacred by their headhunting defense, an overall extremely physical team, being banged up and then going to Atlanta and playing in a pretty good home field environment for the Falcons with a fine quarterback, a really good weapon, and Julio Jones, a nice run game. I think right now I'll take Atlanta to take that game. Then the Chiefs come home on a short week, which is unfortunate, but Thursday night football with the Raiders at home. Home teams have a huge advantage in Thursday night football games. I think the Chiefs win at home and end up catching the Raiders twice in really good spots for the Chiefs. If they're going to Oakland on Thursday night football, or Oakland had the bye week coming to Kansas City, or had the bye week in Oakland, any of those cases would be looking much uglier for Kansas City. But I think the Chiefs got really nice breaks with both Oakland games. The Chiefs have Tennessee at home. I'll take the win there. Sunday night football on Christmas is going to be Denver in Kansas City. That game is going to be, with the way I have the schedule playing out, the Chiefs would be one game behind the Broncos in the second to last week, with the Broncos coming to Arrowhead. I hope that's not the case. I hope the Chiefs are tied or have a lead in the division there. But the way I have it, it would be a game back. This would be to catch up to the Broncos. That's huge. I think the Chiefs win at home against Denver and then go to San Diego, finish up business in week 17, and end up taking a playoff spot. I didn't go through the trouble of figuring out the tiebreakers in this situation, but I think with the Chiefs actually beating every divisional team one time, beating the Chargers twice, beating the Raiders twice, beating the Broncos once, I think the Chiefs have a really great chance of taking the division here, even if they and Denver both end up at 11-5. That is all she wrote for this episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio, on ArrowheadAddict.com, on iTunes, on Stitcher. You would have to try to not keep up with this podcast if you are, in fact, a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBRISCO, JB Briscoe on Twitter. For your questions, comments, concerns, anything you've got to say, say it to me on there. Say it to me at facebook.com/RTK show. You can support the show at patreon.com/RTK. You can review the show at any of those places that I mentioned earlier so more people find it. Share the show as the show grows for the regular season, because as much as I love the regular season shows and diving into all sorts of obscure topics we can talk about, I had pretty much reached critical mass with my Laurent Duvernay-Tardif analysis. But now there's actual football. I cannot wait to get back with you after the game to talk about the Chiefs' first win of the 2016 season, or to have a really, really sad recap episode. Either way, I'll be back. Thanks for listening. Bye, Mom!